I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you a ripe one, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer, all winter without them is a culinary bummer.
Well, you recognize that tune. It means we're heading in the garden with Master Gardener Ed Bayarski about to join us by phone to share some wisdom about how to make it work out there in the garden in this special and strange ecosystem we call home here. And if you have any pressing gardening questions, this is your opportunity. Call on into the station, 772-3808, during the program here, and get a question answered on In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Bayarski. And before we dive into the phones here, we want to thank the Flower Farm for helping underwrite this program. They're out there at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing, 10 till 4 every day but Wednesday, with delivery available in the evenings, including delivery of bouquets in the jar, and they've got subscriptions available too. The Flower Farm, 772-3464. Okay, and we'll connect to Ed Bayarski by phone. You with us, Ed?
I'm here, Oren.
Okay, excellent. Thanks for taking the time. I'm sure, I don't know about you, but we have a momentary break in the rain. It's been on and off rainbow weather today around here. Little beams of sunlight hitting patches of earth here and there.
Yeah, we're getting into the... I haven't seen much for rainbows, but it was beautiful this morning. Yesterday was spectacular, and the rains are returning. So it's a good day. I'm transplanting stuff back in the ground I dug out last week. So it's going well.
Nice. Nice indeed. Well, what's on your mind for how to spend our week here in the garden? What should we be thinking about?
Well, one of my own personal priorities, I got one of them done already and the other to go, is reconnecting electric fence.
Uh-huh.
In fact, at this point, it's primarily protecting my apple trees and carrots from bears.
Right.
You know, in Petersburg, I don't know how your bear situation is. I know you got plenty of deer. And so, and porcupines, you know, maybe and maybe not. But that's really something worth doing. And now that, well, we still have moist soil, which is important to keep the critters that might be touching our electric fence well grounded so they get the full effect and enjoyment of the fence.
Right. Yeah, I think, well, I'm pretty sure around here a lot of people could benefit from having a refresher on how to install and maintain and use electric fences, because certainly the black bears of the area are spending a lot of time checking out what's going on in town. This is a real bad year for natural food supplies for bears around here.
Yes, here, same thing here. I mean, few berries, low wild berry crop. And so, no, I've heard the same thing in our neighborhoods also. And our little dog alerted to probably a bear, and my wife likely heard one yesterday morning in our neighborhood. So the bear, keeping the bear, and then if you're like here, there's an awful lot, it's an epidemic of chickens, too. And bears like chickens.
Yeah.
Well, not everything else like chickens, too. So most, and here, Fish and Game even has a pamphlet, a handout, for folks on how to choose and install an electric fence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worth talking to your neighbors, of course, whether there's a there may very well be an established bear trail, like kind of like the deer trails, you know, that come out of the forest to come down to visit, whatever. So again, if you put an electric fence, then you might end up diverting those bears over into your neighbor's property or something.
But if you or the neighbors already have,
say, a woven wire fence, then you can install an electric, essentially just a single wire on top of that, like from post to post, right above the woven wire fences, which again helps extend the height of it and helps make it more effective that way. So if you have something like for here, we have porcupine issues, porcupine tries to climb up that wire fence and then hits the hot wire on top and gets shot and discouraged. So that's worth working on too.
Okay, so what are some of the key points that people should think about if they're, yeah, if they're looking at installing or reinstalling or purchasing an electric fence? What do they need to think about?
Okay, so there's choices. There's several interesting choices. I mean, there's a standard plug it into 110 volt house current, which is about as easy as it gets. And that you're looking, you start out looking for a charger, a fence charger. That's the item that you will hang on someplace where it's usually, well, out of, some of them need to be out of the rain and sheltered, but there are also then some solar powered fence chargers. They have a little panel on top of them. They are actually meant to be pretty much out in the open, on a post at the edge of your garden. And a lot of them have the equivalent of something like a 6-volt motorcycle battery or similar to that. There are smaller versions you may have heard of or read about. People take camping with them or even out hunting to protect their tents, cooking areas, potential game meat, if they're so lucky. And I've even seen them out at fish camps and that sort of thing. Or same thing, you have the electric wires that are out around either fish drying racks or smoking, fish smokers and that kind of thing. So the choices, and then when you start looking, looking harder at choices, some of them are compared by how many miles of fence they can charge and how strong is the charge. So again, you may be looking at some of these, and I don't remember the exact wattage or amperage that they put out. So some are only good for small animals, like for dogs and small critters. Some are, and it kind of ramps up from there. So like the most powerful are pretty much for bears. Bears are more, how shall we say, motivated to get in at the whatever you're trying to protect in there. And then you're also thinking about the other critters such as deer and particularly horses. Horses are apparently very sensitive to the electric fence. And again, different critters react differently. So horses, and I know deer will react similarly. They, instead of backing off, you know, if they get shocked in their face, nose, arms, legs, whatever, like we might, you know, we jump back. A bear tends to jump back. A dog backs up. The deer and the horses tend to bolt forward. So there can be issues, and so then the design of the wires which are holding the charge make a difference. So you got the strength of your charger first to think about. And of course, where it's going to be put. If you don't have power, then you're probably going to go with a battery powered or solar charger. Then look at the different wires, and there's lots of different choices. Like for horses, particularly though, they have this woven, flat, almost like ribbon. I guess that's a good way to describe it. Usually white. That is, I've seen them a half inch wide or even wider. It's plastic. It's a polyethylene or similar durable plastic, which has fine wires woven through it to carry the charge.
So it has a little bit of a flexibility or something, so it doesn't just snap when it gets charged into?
Yes. It's strong. Yes, it's stronger that, so hopefully the horse isn't going to break it if they bolt forward, or deer. There are, and the other thing is it's more visible because it's wide, this wide white, sometimes they call it fencing tape even. But it's very wide, half inch wide or wider with these wires in it. There's woven wire in all different colors. You can get black and orange and blue and white and red and whatever different color. But some of them are essentially a twine, same thing, a plastic twine with the wires woven through the twine. And the nice thing about that stuff, and with many of these, is that you get a break and you can literally tie knots in this stuff, or take another piece and tie knots in it so that the little wires make contact, and so to carry the charge from, you know, across a broken piece of wire.
Nice. Okay.
Then they're true wire, and there's quite lightweight aluminum wire. That stuff does break easily, unfortunately, but it transmits its charge well. There's galvanized wires, which eventually do rust in our wet climate, but they're tougher, stronger than the aluminum wire. And then they're the most expensive tend to be there. You can buy copper-coated wire. Usually you aren't likely to buy just straight copper wire, but there may well be a copper-coated wire, which, again, carries the charge better than the steel wire, but then, you know, higher expense, and it may still be just as durable. So that's some of the choices to when you start looking at these. Mm. I'll just take a break there before we start giving you more choices.
Right.
Think about them.
Yeah, so how about for yours? What are you doing as far as protecting your trees and carrot beds from bears? What wire choices are you making?
Okay, so I have used both the galvanized wire, very durable. It does kink a little bit as you're unrolling it and stuff, but it's very workable. And again, with a pair of pliers to cut and to twist together, it carries the charge well. Certainly I've accidentally touched it enough times to remind me, oh yeah, it's hot. And I also use the woven plastic twine with the wires in it, and that again is quite convenient. And again, particularly when we go from the wire choices, then we start going to the insulator choices. So, because we got to keep, if this particularly depending if you're using a wooden post or a steel post to support the wires, then you need some insulators so that the wires don't ground out onto the wet wood or onto the steel posts. So there are nail-in insulators, there are screw-on insulators, there are various snap-on insulators, and again, in a multitude of colors, orange, yellow, black, white, and there's probably other ones than that, too. I think I've got an assortment of them. So those, depending on how you attach them to your posts, you can also you can get fiberglass posts, which there you can just wrap the wire around the post and then go on to the next post, because the fiberglass doesn't conduct the electricity to ground it out to the soil.
Nice.
So that's convenient there. Or they make little clips that clip onto the fiberglass posts also. Or some of these insulators, they slide down the post, the small diameter ones, and they have a little screw-on knob which holds them in place. And in fact, you can even use rebar for some of these of the right size. Again, you slide the insulator on, and they have a tightening device to hold the insulators at the height above ground that you want. And again, there it depends on what kind of critters you're trying to control, whether you need a low wire that's down, say, at 6 inches high to try to keep the porcupines out, versus usually for bears, I usually do two wires, and there's usually one about 18 inches high and another one about 3 feet high above the ground. Because the bears don't usually, they can jump, but they don't usually, if they touch, you know, they're coming along at walking along the ground and their nose is, say, 3 feet off the ground and touches it, they will stop and back off.
Right.
With deer, you may need a higher wire. Deer, you may need to go up to about 4 feet high. Yes, the deer can jump also. But again, this, you know, once they get used to it, and it's worth when you're installing your wires, particularly if the critters aren't used to it in your neighborhood, you can hang ribbons on the wires to make it more visible to the animals. You can get quite creative if you've got a bear problem. One of the things they sometimes recommend take a piece of aluminum foil and smear a little bit of either peanut butter or bacon grease on it and twist it over the wire. So you can, if you visualize this a little bit and think, oh, the bear smells this stuff and picks his tongue out, and there's a exciting reaction, potentially.
Right. Yeah, good point. Okay, so it's the opposite of like hiding the wire from the bear. You're wanting to lead them right to the pain, so they just choose to leave you alone.
Yep. And another thing I've also done is even take an apple. You know, again, I'm trying to protect my apples. So I'll take apple chunks and take a little piece of this, particularly the galvanized where it's easy. And same thing, you know, it's like it's like bait. So you're hanging a piece of apple on a wire, on your hot wire, and again, whether that be for the bear or the deer, do you know, the deer like apples too. And same thing as with peanut butter or bacon grease or something like that.
Gotcha. So you're just kind of helping them learn that, oh, this guy's apples taste really weird. They hurt.
Yeah, aversion therapy, I think, something like that.
Right. Nice.
So again, you know, if you go back, and the other, probably the one of the most important things in your installation of an electric fence system is making sure, so on the electric fencer, the fence charger, the little box, there are two terminals. There's the hot wire, the red one usually, and which goes, or black, which goes out to the fence, to your fence. And then there's either green, or sometimes it may be the black one also, which goes to a grounding post. And usually grounding posts are pound them into moist soil, somewhere not too far away from the fence charger, so that then when you've got hot wires, some people will actually do two separate wires, so you have a hot wire and a grounded wire, as well as the ground to the soil, too. So if you've got multiple wires, they may alternate hot wire, ground wire. And so then, you know, a critter sticks its head in there and will touch two wires at the same time, if they aren't, although again, with our moist soil, usually they're pretty well grounded. But getting that ground post in the ground, and then a good solid connection, that's usually copper wire from the fence charger to the grounding post, is really extremely important to make the connection. I mean, to complete the circuit when the bear, the deer, the porcupine comes along, touches its nose or whatever body part to it, to the hot wire, and then is grounded out, you know, with their four bare feet, and get the appropriate charge and reminder.
Hmm. Okay, yeah, good point. Good reminder.
So again, you're thinking, you know, if you have, well, again, maybe you already have a woven wire fence. Another way to work this, both for bears and for porcupines particularly, is on the outside of a woven wire fence, you can buy, they sometimes call them standoff insulators. They're actually insulators that have a longer post. Your wire fence is on your post already attached. Then you put an insulator which sticks out away from the fence, 4 inches, 6 inches, or something like that, or even a wire, like I mentioned earlier, on the top of the post. So again, the critter, you know, if it's a climbing critter, it starts climbing up the wire, and up the fence wire, and touches the hot wire, and again is discouraged from going any farther. And we installed that around the big community garden here in Juneau many years ago, primarily to keep porcupines out, but it works also on bears too.
So when you're doing it that way, is it the electric part of it is not electrifying the whole woven fence, is it? It's just that when they touch the wire and the fence, then they create a circuit and get a zap?
Yes, to the second part of that. Yes, you are not electrifying the woven wire fence. Mm-hmm. However, there are some of those where you buy, literally, it's usually it's plastic fence netting with the little hot wires woven into it. Sometimes they may call that sheep fencing, even. Because sheep, sometimes, especially winter sheep, fall and winter sheep are fairly well insulated with their wool, you know, but anyway, that having multiple wires fairly close together, again, helps to get, or helps them make contact. So again, and then they may have, you know, this may be just supported slightly above the ground, so obviously they don't crawl underneath it. But there are, you can buy that, and it, so it comes in a pre-existing roll, and that's one of those that you would attach to the fiberglass posts with little clips or other pieces of wire also.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Huh, okay, and so... So then for yours, do you run it 110 to the house, or do you use battery or solar, you mentioned?
Mine is 110 to the house, or actually out in my greenhouse. I've got two different chargers for two different areas, just because of the way it's easier to connect that way. And I've got one in the center of, I've got a circular driveway where I've got three apple trees. And so there I've got underground power going out to the circle, where I can plug in my charger, which is out there, and it runs around. And it's seasonal. You know, you may or may not have to have this on all the time, unless you've got a lot of critters. If it's for deer, you may want it on all the time. But for bears, you know, it's normally when the fruit is ripening.
Right.
And then the other area where I've got the electric fence inside my greenhouse, with the charger, the ground post is outside of that. And then I've got a connecting wire to that goes to my fencing wires and around my lower orchard. And then also a section of insulated wire that goes over to my carrot patch. And again, that's where I'm trying to design the gardens, what's planted, hopefully to keep the, I'm learning. The stuff that's most attractive to the critters that you have in your area, kind of close together. You have your orchard, you know, all your berry bushes and fruit trees and carrot patch or whatever else, kind of together, so you can more easily fence it. You know, that's part of your whole garden design, and garden planning.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay, that is a good point. As folks out there are thinking about, okay, well. Maybe this season I won't quite get to it, but then next year I want to work toward having this option.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, if you know, so one year you may be planting some fruit trees, and then you think, okay, well, I'd like some raspberry plants or some currants or some gooseberries or something else. So those, I mean, the apple trees, cherry trees, or other trees will, of course, get taller, so those would be to the north side of your area, and then in front of that would be the raspberries, the currants, the gooseberries, and then maybe in front of that are the strawberry beds, you know, so, and somewhere in there are your carrot patch, if you've got one of those special bears that really likes carrots. they learn, and the mother teaches the little ones, and then they grow up, and then they keep coming back for more. So yeah, work on the planning rather than having sometimes you're lucky for the first few years. Oh, no, there's no bears getting into it. So you plant some other trees over on the other side of your yard, and then it's a plant it and they will come sort of thing, at least around Juneau.
Gotcha.
I advertise every person who buys a fruit tree that, are you thinking about this?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, or maybe if you've got chickens, have your fruit trees and berry bushes close to the chicken run, so you can electrify that too.
Hmm. That's a really, really,
course,
really valuable consideration.
Yeah. And then you might also, well, want something else that you might want to or need to fence, might be the compost bin.
Mm-hmm.
For this reason. So again, the compost bins are good if they're close to the chickens. And then, so they're protected. Sometimes, you know, whatever we dig in, sometimes the bears sniff it out and think, oh, there's got to be something good in there. And they tear apart your compost. And, I mean, they're turning your compost for you, but maybe they're not doing it for you.
Right. Yeah, gosh, that's a good point too. Is it just the stuff that's the stinkiest, or is it they can smell the sugars and they know?
I wish I could predict it. Yeah. I would say different bears have different tastes. Sure. Like.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, those are good considerations. I think this is one of those years that people can't help but think about, like, okay, wow, what can we do if you know, if we have another year like this? Because certainly, or maybe people even just can just hop right to it and just spend the weekend this weekend, get it up there, like throw an electric fence up around your chickens and those parts of your garden that are going to be irresistible to hungry bears. I don't know if the bears around here have reached the state of aphasia yet, I think, or hyperphasia.
Ah, well, yeah, this time of year, they're eating. I mean, they should be eating as much as they can.
Right.
Yeah, they're whatever is attractive in our gardens. Sometimes you're surprised. I mean, I get surprised every year. So having it, yeah, it's kind of late. I mean, we should have been talking about this probably back in June. Would have been good timing. So that you can order the parts if they're not locally available. We have one retailer here in town who usually handles insulators at least, and sometimes has chargers and the other material. Again, you can go online, search for electric fencing supplies. There's lots of them. There's lots of them out there available. And then there's YouTube videos that show the whole sequence of events for doing how to install one of these things too. Nice. And it really is useful stuff out there. And then you can make your very own hybrid fence. And I guess somebody should, if you're not asking, but somebody should ask about safety for pets and children, and not to mention adults. And I suppose if you've got a weak heart, you know, it might be a consideration. But normal, properly installed electric fences are usually a pulse charge. It's on, off, on, off, on, off. Most of them have a little flashing light, which will show you that. Many of them, mine at least, you can hear. It's a click, you know, on, off, on, off. Mm. So, again, that is part of the safety mechanism so that it isn't just one continuous charge, like as if you stuck your finger in a light socket.
Right.
Which would be a continual charge and would be a really nasty, very unpleasant to hazardous to your health.
Yeah.
Charge. You know, with this pulse charge, you know, you know, usually you'll touch it and you'll jump back when you get the shock. And so that's, you know, part of the safety issue of it. And then, you know, then there's the entertainment value. I mean, yeah, you may hear the neighbor's dog yelp or something like that. Our little dog was, I was over at my neighbor's house, and she happened to walk underneath his wires were a little lower than my wires are, and her tail touched the fence, and she went yelping all the way home. Quite unhappy about that.
I bet. Yeah, well, right. Okay, so you want to maybe think about your pets, and interesting. So with yours, do you consider the height of your dog when you're putting the wire up? Like, do you have it?
No, it's more a matter of hopefully the dog learns and avoids. I mean, mine is a little higher than my neighbor's. He is more trying to keep out porcupines and bears.
Gotcha.
The other issue, which goes along with all of this, okay, so you've got a low wire to try to keep porcupines out, you know, because there are some of them. You know, which is like 12 inches high or lower. That's why my dog got hit by the charge. You also have to keep the brush and the grass and the weeds away from the fence underneath it so that those don't round out your fence, thereby weakening the charge that might be affecting the critters that come along. So that's where, you know, you're going to have to be, you're walking your fence. You're checking to see that you don't have plants that are leaning into it or branches or whatever it happens to be, grass growing up too tall that are touching your fence and grounding it out. And usually you'll see that where, you you know, it'll the leaves of the grass will turn brown, or the weeds will turn brown where they are touching that. So that's another important thing to think about. Maybe you want to use some sort of a ground cover, even old boards underneath. You could use old carpeting. You could use landscaping fabric. Just a strip underneath the wire where it is. But again, you've got to remember, you don't want to insulate the ground for if some critter comes along to walk on the fabric and then not get grounded out and chopped by the fence.
Right, right. Okay. So limited in size, just to enough to block plants from growing right beneath the wire if you're going to go that route.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And then one more little bit of entertainment value, and I think I've mentioned this one in the past, is with slugs. So I found, and I haven't noticed it this year yet, but it's early. I have had slugs, and this happens pretty often, slugs which climb up the steel posts and out onto the insulator, and finally they get close enough and they get zapped. And that's a really, it's a distinctive sound. And then, you know, I mentioned about the pulse charge, the on-off charge. Well, I've been woken up in the middle of the night during the summertime, windows were open, and we could actually hear the snap, 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 where the spark is, the slug got close enough, and the spark jumped through the slug, through the slime, to the post.
Uh-huh.
So then, you know, the next day or whatever, if you hear this, you're out in your yard, and you hear, it's distinctive. Then that's where you get out your plastic spoon or plastic knife or well-insulated plastic-handled screwdriver, and you scrape off the slug from the wire, from the insulator.
Gotcha.
And the next night, another somehow follows that trail up and does it again. And what is going on there with the, I know, are slugs somehow attracted to this charge? It's a mystery to me.
Interesting. Okay, so the slug slime trail is conductive of the charge, it sounds like. So you want to, in your toolkit, have a little non-conductive slug scraper.
You got it.
Wow. Okay, that's a good consideration.
Maybe you might leave a couple of mile, like I say, just leave a couple of plastic spoons out there around near the at the corners of your wire or near your charger or something. And that's the other thing too, where when you're installing your charger, you know, normally it plugs into household current, for those at least. But you can get a disconnecting switch that you wire into the circuit, just like a host switch, or very similar to that. So again, you can just flick the switch off if you need to get in, so to pick fruit. But you can also get their insulated handles, which have a hook on them. So again, it's got a spring and a hook with a nice plastic insulated handle. You can grab the handle and unhook the wire and set it down, and then again, you've got to be careful how you wire this, so which direction the current comes through. So you're disconnecting basically you're making a gate. You know, you have these plastic handles or gates, you know, that you can use to easily get in and out of your enclosure. Again, usually to pick fruit or do some maintenance or whatever that happens to be.
Makes sense. Yeah. Nice. Okay, that's a good consideration too, for sure. Granting yourself safe access through the fence.
Yep. And otherwise, if you're inside there, just remember, don't back up into the fence.
Oof. yeah, good point. Wow. Okay. Well,
There will be times it will happen, and you will be reminded of it. And why I have this electric fence here, I need to remember that.
Yeah, well, it's a good way to verify that it's still operational.
Yes.
Okay, well, That's a interesting topic and a timely one to think about, and lots of good tips there. Safety, practicality, setup, design, and yeah, appreciate you sharing that info with us this week.
Yeah, and again, it's something where, you know, again, if you've got neighbors who are gardeners, I mean, you can extend the wire. You can do, I mean, for some of these, I mean, the fencing chargers that I have, they say they will charge 5 miles or 10 miles of fence. Well, you could do a small neighborhood if you're creative with your, you know, connections to go from, you know, from one neighbor to the next place or something, so you can protect more of an area.
Nice. Okay, that's a good point. If you have kind of a cooperative type gardening arrangement going on, there's a great way to be even more bonded, electrically bonded.
Sure.
Cool. Well, that's a great tip too. All right. Well, maybe we'll leave it there and pick it up again next week. How about that, Ed?
Okay. I'll let you know if I have any obvious critters that get discouraged. But at least, yeah, my apples are looking good on the tree and they are protected. So
nice.
Makes me happy. So we can make there's apple pie and applesauce futures.
Good. Okay, that's comforting. And, you know, and it's good long-term just to discourage bears from turning to our properties as their source of food.
Yes.
It's good for everybody to discourage that.
Yep.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Ed, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Till next week.
There you have it. In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Bajarski. Great topic. Interesting. Full of good practical advice there. And we do put the recordings of these In the Garden up on our website if you ever need to reference back to an idea that gets raised during the show. And if you have a pressing question for next week, or if something comes up this weekend while you're working in the garden and you want to put the question to Ed Bajarski, do feel free. You know, you can call during the show next week, same time, same place. Or you could even shoot me an email when the question comes up in your mind. Before you forget, send an email to me over at the radio station, orin@kfsk.org, and we'll get your gardening question answered by Regional Master Gardener Ed Bajarski. Up next, it's going to be High Country Music. Chris Ford, your DJ here on KFSK this afternoon. Before that, though, we want to recognize the Flower Farm for helping support In the Garden here on KFSK. They're at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing, open 10 till 4 every day but Wednesday, and with delivery available in the evenings as well, with bouquets of